you know, basically what you have is a government willing to consider a ridiculous idea for the sake of political popularity. An idea that will doom the country.
This legitimately sounds like when I was in middle school and we tried to make change happen by handing out slips of paper and having people vote on it.
Yeah.
But, okay, so am I supposed to be shocked by this, though? Because we're talking about a country that still was hell-bent on being even more racist than our country was in the early 60s, well into the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Well into the 80s, well into the 90s.
When did apartheid 94. Started? When did Mandela start being super awesome? He's always been awesome.
Mandela was out in the early 90s and apartheid fell in 94.
I was going to say, it was like I was alive while there were still... There were still people holding up paper bags to see if they were a Bantu or black.
Yeah. And it's terrible what happened over there, but just taking all the land away from the people who have it is not a workable solution.
I mean, that's the irony of this entire situation is that it makes me think about what I imagine in our country a lot of black people would like to do to southern plantation owners, but they didn't or haven't because we organized it and had it be reparations. I'm not saying that all of this has happened, but I'm saying seems like the very crude way of screw you. You screwed us over. Now we're just going to take the fields we plowed.
Because you had a strong and responsible central government in the United States. This is why that didn't happen. Zimbabwe did not have that. Zimbabwe was taken over by Robert Mugabe, who is a warlord.
Zimbabwe didn't have a stable government? That's insane.
The African National Congress is a democratically elected government. But it is falling into a very dangerous sort of populist mentality that could undo all of the wealth and all the success that South Africa has had. Make no mistake, if they go forward and they just take the land of the white farmers, the white farmers are going to leave and international investment is going to leave and South Africa is going to find itself on its own, which would not be the first time that had happened to an African nation.
Well, and that's, I mean, which is what's crazy to think about is, I remember when I lived in Europe, my firm was from the Netherlands and was like, why is your country one country? I was like, I don't know what you mean. And she was like, no, but it's just, you all seem very different. It's very large. Like, look at Africa. And we have states that are bigger than African countries, yet we're all still one country. But it is, I mean, globes and atlases and maps need to be updated the most as a result of Africa, because so often something will fall, something will be absorbed into another country, something.
I give you two reasons.
And I think we're close to there now.
I give you two reasons. Number one, this country was settled by people who had no interest in anything other than land ownership. And we're not from here. Number two, we took all of the people who historically would have made war against each other and decimated their population and stuck them on a piece of useless land in the middle of the desert and threatened to shoot them if they came off of it. So that's sort of how you get to where we are today, which is very, very bad news and very unfair to the Native Americans. But it certainly goes a long way in explaining why we don't wind up like Africa, why we don't wind up like the European Union. It's because from the beginning we had this idea of, you know, sort of land ownership is the thing. Everybody gets some shared sovereignty, and we move on from there.
Well, and that's when I... It's funny you say that, because when that happened when I was living in Italy, I called my brother and told him that my friend from the Netherlands said this, and this was in 2009. And he said, so she asked you why we were all one country, and like all one government, one financial situation, and all that. And I said, yeah. He goes, did you respond by saying, you mean the thing you're doing with the euro right now?
Yeah. Except that...
I saw there being like, oh, that's a pretty good point.
Except that, and I don't want to get off on this tangent, because we've got to get through the show.
Yes.
The European Union was about economic expedience and creating a lasting peace between the European nations. It was never driven by anything more than that. It wasn't driven by any sort of shared love or shared responsibility or shared needs and desires. It was simply, if we all get together, we have more economic strength, and that puts us in a better position in the 21st century. In the United States, it was all about land. The phrase that...
Manifest destiny.
The phrase that best describes America and the American attitude, four words that will sum up America and what we are and what we stand for. Get off my lawn. What America is. America is get off my lawn. My lawn.
See, I was going to say from sea to shining sea, but that's five words.
No, it's get off my lawn. That's it. That's what we're all about. You get off my lawn, you stay off my lawn, we're going to get along just fine. You stay on your lawn, I'll stay on my lawn, we'll pay our taxes.
This is my dance space, this is your dance space.
My lawn. You go to Europe, you don't get as much of that. You don't have people sitting around going, get off my lawn. You know, they're not like, hey, get out of my apartment building. Because, like,
heterosexual male friends hold hands walking down the street.
They don't have the same.
You don't get used to that when you're an Irish American.
Outside of the countryside, where the farms are everything, you don't have that same sense of land ownership that we have in the United States. This was a country that was built on land ownership. Canada kind of was, but Canada was also built on natural resources. You know, Canada expanded because there were beavers and pelts to be had in the middle of the country, and there was lumber everywhere.
I was going to say, you cannot forget lumber when you're talking about Canada.
And a lot of the early Canadian settlers, I don't think we're even sitting around going, like, we're going to stay here. You know, people were coming to the United States, and they're like, that's mine. I'm going to take that, and I'm going to build a house on it, and that's mine. And the government said, please, everybody come in and get some land. And 200 years later, get off my lawn. Nearly 250 years later, get off my lawn.
Well, because once you have the land, you want it to be super special and awesome.
It is you.
Where are we? Entertainment?
Fine. We have to do sports as well. Your choice.
I'll do sports. Or I can do sports now. Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers just got an $80 million contract?
It's a record, actually. Nope. It's a record-breaking four-year, $130 million extension.
Oh, he just gets $80 million this year. I knew there was $80 million.
It's going to be worth up to $180 million in total.
Wow. So, 4 years, $130 million.
This I was actually excited about because don't tell the part of my family that likes football, but I like Aaron Rodgers.
I like Aaron Rodgers, too.
I think he's a good egg. And he's a talented guy. Like, he's definitely good at what he does and isn't. There are some football players. I spent most of my early 20s and late teens dating football players. There's some football players that are like, oh, when are you going to load me? Aaron Rodgers is just like a chill, genuine guy who's like, yep, I can throw a football.
Aaron Rodgers is not worth $30 million. No football player.
I'm sorry, it's $134.
No, but it's $30 million a year. No football player is worth $30 million.
Oh, of course not. Not even Tommy Boy.
We're at a point with this now where this genie has to go back into the bottle. These salaries cannot keep going up like this because it's unsustainable. And it's, you know, what people sit around and they complain about, like, oh, you know, these top CEOs are making like 7,000 times what the workers are making. What is Aaron Rodgers' salary compared to a lineman on that team who's probably making league minimum, which is around $600,000 a year? Okay.
Pobrecito.
What is Aaron Rodgers making relative to the people serving you peanuts and beer in the stands?
Well, and beyond that, it's a matter of that as much as, yeah, of course, you become a professional athlete to make money.
Sure.
Ultimately. But, like, I had a friend who was this little guy. He cheated on his wife with her.
Roger Clemens?
No, Arroyo.
Felix?
Bronson?
Oh, Bronson Arroyo. Yeah.
His wife, I don't know. But I had a friend who, like, casually dated Bronson Arroyo. And I met up with him for a drink one night. And I was talking to him about, he had some, like, franchise with Dunkin' Donuts or something. And I was talking to him about it. And he was like, honestly, the money's great. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, ever since I was 4 years old, all I want to do is just play baseball.
That's the guy I want on my team.
Yeah, like, he's like, they could pay me minimum wage and I would still do all of this.
That's the guy I want on my team.
And that's what it should be.
Yeah.
And that's the same as, like, that's, I mean, and I told him I likened it to being a comedian, where I was like, I always joke that, like, comedy's my abusive boyfriend that occasionally makes up for it by buying me flowers. And it's the same thing as I always tell people, you have to love it to do it. And I would do it, and I often do it for no money.
But here's the thing.
Just because I love doing it.
How many millions?
And I'm good at it.
How many millions a year is enough? Do you really need $30 million a year to play quarterback?
I mean, unless you're going to put in your will that you're going to donate $300 million to, like, the best charity ever.
Plus the endorsements, like, this guy gets.
That's what I'm saying, is, like, there's only, I mean, I come from a very comfortable family. My brother and sister both make a very good amount of money. Oh, actually, my sister was named one of 5 lawyers to watch in the entire United States yesterday.
Ah, good for her.
Get it, Megan. But it gets to a point where it's like, yeah, having nice clothes, not having to worry about your credit card debt, all of that stuff is great. But I remember reading a study where they said anyone who makes over $100,000 a year, there's, like, a cap on how much you actually need to feel okay about money.
Like, Aaron Rodgers.
And everything else is just gravy.
Aaron Rodgers should be out building children's hospitals every year with that money. That's what he should be doing.
That's
because
what
you
I'm
don't
saying.
Need it. You can keep the first check,
it's like,
Aaron.
What? Are you going to buy one of those stupid islands off the coast of Dubai that's shaped like the world?
Keep the first $30 million, put it in the bank, you're set for life, take the rest of it, go build some children's hospitals. I want to see these salaries come down, is what I'm saying. Because what this has become with these NFL salaries is a measuring stick. And we know how much men love measuring sticks.
Yeah, like, if we, like, so 4 year, $134 million, if we capped it at 50, they would still be set for life. And that is, let's see, that is $84 million that could go to something way more worthwhile.
His agent's going to siphon 40% of that off, by the way.
Ugh, gross. I hate people.
J.D. Martinez.
I'm not even going to feign knowing what
you're baseball
talking about.
Girl. You didn't hear about J.D. Martinez?
I
yes.
mean, I assumed he was baseball because he has an adorable Spanish name.
He
but
plays for the Red Sox. He's great. He's playing.
He's the right fielder?
Yes. He's a potential.
See, I do know stuff. Ooh, he's pretty hot.
He's a potential Triple Crown winner this season. He also admits that, yes, I posted a thing on Instagram.
Oh, the thing about Hitler.
With a picture of Hitler.
I knew his name sounded familiar.
with a quote that no one knows if Hitler ever actually said
JD.
This. And the quote is, "To conquer a nation, first disarm its citizens." And under this meme, J.D. Martinez had this to say.
What an idiot.
Quote, "This is why I always stay strapped. Hashtag the truth."
Oh my God, he's such an idiot.
Don't make any sudden movements around J.D. Martinez, is what I'm going to say. Now,
I'm sorry, I always try to control my laughter when we're on the air, but what an idiot.
Now,
my God.
Everybody's bringing this up, and they're like, oh my God.
I snorted. That's how you know I think something is very funny.
J.D. Martinez posted Hitler, and J.D. Martinez this, and J.D. Martinez that. I don't care. You know why I don't care?
I mean, it was totally because he was dumb enough to post this shows that it was entirely innocent, because nobody with a half a brain would ever do that.
Well, he did it in 2013. and he grew up in Cuba.
Still just as much of an
idiot. No, I like this. Because the press.
I can't stop laughing. Right. I'm sorry, listeners. I'm calming
move
down.
Move away from the microphone or
I'm going to drink some Gatorade. I will calm down.
This is what he had to say to the media last night when they were circling like sharks. Quote, this is J.D. Martinez. Quote, "Everyone here has a right to their own political beliefs, and everybody has the right to stand by what they believe in. That's what makes us Americans. We're not all going to agree on the same things, but that's what makes this country so great, end quote. Team Martinez. I'm on board. He owns it. He's like you said, look, I did this 6 years ago. I don't want to hear about it. But if you want to know my position on guns, here it is. You want to know my position on what I did? Here it is. All right. I'm going to stand by what I said. You all can go F yourselves.
Well, and
power to you, sir.
Honestly, just as I was talking about earlier when we were talking about the super fun topic of sexual assault. But when I said that happened to me when I was 19, I would obviously take a different path now. This JD is a year younger than me. When I think about things I did 6 years ago, I mean, that's the thing is, if he posted that yesterday, I'd be like, come on, dude. Like, you're 31. Like, look alive. But I think it's cool that he owned it, but also just said, like, we're allowed to say what we want. Yeah. Like, at the time, he was, okay, so he's 31. That was 6 years ago. That means he was 25. I was a dummy when I was 25.
Yeah.
Like, I said some of the dumbest stuff I've ever said. I've done some of the dumbest things I've ever done when I was 25.
Then she got a radio show, kids.
Technically, I was still on the radio. I was already on the radio when that happened, but we don't have to talk about that anyways.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Wow. I was there for some of that.
Can't get rid of me.
Holy cow.
I was on two radio shows at the time. Thank you.
Yeah, but so was I.
But that's, yeah, you were too. but that's my point, is that, like, even if he was famous at the time, it's a matter of, like, everyone does dumb stuff when they're in the mid-20s. And the sheer fact, I agree with you, the sheer fact that he was like, yeah, like, we're allowed to say, this is a country where we can say whatever we want and, like, whatever. And I'm not going to, like, defend it, but I'm also not going to apologize for something stupid I said on social media.
Yep, you keep being you,
six
JD.
6 years ago.
On board.
Oh, good man. Okay, entertainment, we're wrapping up. This is making me angry. Rain Dove.
She is the one that released the topless...
You're supposed to say they.
Okay, they are the ones who released, I don't know, because I hadn't gotten into that part of it. Rain Dove is dating... Rose McGowan.
Yes.
Rose McGowan is friends with Asia Argento.
Yes.
Asia Argento went to Rose McGowan and said, I'm being blackmailed and on and on and on, and you know, this is what's going on. And Rain Dove got the... Asia sent the photos of herself and Bennett to Rose McGowan. Rose McGowan shared them with Rain Dove.
And Rain Dove sent them.
Sent them to the police. Someone at the police, the Los Angeles police, of course, released them to the media.
LAPD, I miss you.
So we now have an evidence trail for how those pictures found their way into the media. And Rose McGowan came out and admitted this. Well, admitted like her involvement in it and Rain Dove's involvement in it, but denied that they were the source of the leak, that the police were the source of the leak.
Come on. Well, ever since the story broke, I've been sitting here being like, okay, so Rose McGowan randomly stopped talking to someone who was one of her best friends just as this was happening.
Yeah.
I was in high school for 4 whole years. That's exactly how this works.
Blaming your dead by suicide ex-husband for the payments that you made to an underage actor that you slept with when he was underage, whether or not he had been sending you nudes his entire life, is pretty bad luck.
Yeah.
And by the way, if he's been sending her nudes since he was 12, that's child pornography. Someone should go have a look at Asia Argento's phones and computers. I can't even.
Well, and I mean... the sheer fact, I mean, the whole, like, this is why I had to leave Los Angeles, is that I can't pretend any of this is normal or okay.
No.
Like, I can't.
In Los Angeles, that's a Tuesday.
I spent so long, like, one of my good friends there, who wasn't a comedian, one of my good civilian friends there, was dating a guy who was polyamorous, and he was also dating three other women. And two of them came to her birthday party with him. And I watched them interact, and I just sat there being like, okay, I'm one of the most open, non-judgmental people that exists. This is messed up.
Yeah.
This is not cool. This is not something I will ever hop on board with.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there because I'm going to talk my wife. I'm trying to talk my wife into that, and you're not helping.
Molly, don't do it.
Yeah, she has no intention of doing it at all.
Wait, she knows that I am like a non-starter, though, right? Like,
oh, yeah. No. You're not involved in this in any way, shape, or form.
I remember the day that she was like, I know you'd never hook up with Derek.
Yeah.
And I was like, good.
Yeah, I'm looking for sister wives. She's not. But you know, negotiations are happening.
But this whole Rain Dove, Rose McGowan's non-binary partner speaks out that these text messages were given to Belize by him and Rose, and they were about this guy who was like voluntarily sleeping. Like, I can't even, I'm like, how do any of you even have your GED? Like, it is so frustrating listening to these people pretend to have a brain.
Now you know why people like me get frustrated when they talk about politics.
So I swear to God, like, living there, living in Los Angeles, which this is just a prime story of it. Living in Los Angeles, I felt like I was getting dumber. Every day that I woke up, I felt like my brain was slowly atrophying.
I never got that when I was living in Los Angeles, but what I did...
Well, you were younger than I was when you lived there.
No, I think I was older. I was in my mid-30s when I was out there.
Oh, shite.
But what I did get out there was a sense that ambition and drive were not things that were necessarily valued in anybody. So if you were someone like me who tends to be going a million miles an hour all the time, no one in Los Angeles is going to see that as an asset.
No, it's who you're friends with and who you're sleeping with.
Here in the Northeast, it's like, oh, you can go a million miles an hour. We're going to hire you. In Los Angeles, they're like, calm down. It's okay.
Just relax.
The way I always describe to people is
that it's a bunch of people who act really chilled out while simultaneously having six up their bums.
Yep.
And who take themselves and expect you to take yourself very seriously while no one has anything to take themselves seriously about. Like, and how do you get famous? Nope. It's not if you're talented. It's not if you work hard. It's who you're blowing or who's blowing you. It's basically the whole thing. But yeah, Rain Dove.
Yeah.
I'm sure they are a fantastic companion to Rose McGowan.
Neil Simon.
Neil Simon died, which is awful because he's wonderful.
91 years old.
I was going to say, that's the thing. It's not even awful. If he died at 91 in New York, which was his favorite city, from pneumonia, which is how old people die when it's time for them to go, I'm down.
Hopefully you didn't get that Legionnaire's disease that they've got up at Hampton Beach that I keep hearing about. Tell me if this was your first reaction, Shay, when you heard this. Oh, he was still alive?
No, only because theater geek waters run deep. So I am like... what's the word I'm looking for? I'm like backdoor still invested in all of that.
Yeah.
So like I never, the theater geek thing, I did love doing theater and I was damn good at it. But when I tried to go back to it in my early 20s, I was like, I'm like not nerdy enough for this.
It's one of those, when you don't hear somebody's name for a long time in theater circles, you assume that they're dead and you just sort of missed it.
The thing is that my friend, the reason I was aware that he was still alive is my friend did a, because I'm still friends with a lot of people from like theater camp, theater school, who actually did pursue it in the lamer jazz hands version that I did.
Whoops.
but one of them was in a, I think it was in San Francisco, was in a reboot of Barefoot in the Park.
Ah, yes.
And
the early hit.
Oh, I love Barefoot. Yeah. Like, they said that that was kind of underrated / like not very good. I love Barefoot in the Park.
The thing about...
It's such a dry comedy. It's wonderful.
But the thing about Barefoot in the Park is it is... It's sort of expected.
I mean, it's so predictable.
It's predictable. It's expected. It's the kind of theater that existed. It's when he starts doing things like The Odd Couple, which no one had ever seen a show like The Odd Couple before. No one had ever seen that. And that becomes his hallmark. He's telling stories about things that are happening in the modern world involving everyday people.
But so Barefoot in the Park is, yes, very predictable. But... it reminds me of when I saw Christmas Vacation for the first time.
Yeah.
Which was way later. Like, I saw it for the first time when I was, like, 19. And I remember watching it, and I looked at my brother and was like, this is dumb. Like, this is all so predictable. And he was like, well, of course it's predictable. This came out, like, when you were two.
Yeah.
This invented all the things... that made this predictable to you. Like, this paved the way for everything that made you feel like this was predictable. And Barefoot in the Park, I feel, is the same. Whereas, if you saw the day that he wrote it, if you saw the day it came out, the day someone performed it
wildly
for the first
fresh
time,
and new.
Exactly. Whereas now we can look at it and honestly, objectively say, oh, you know, this is a little tired, this is a little predictable, this is a little this. But it wouldn't be if it weren't for all the things that were allowed to exist because that did.
Yeah, and same thing with The Odd Couple. The Odd Couple influences so much of what comes in the 1970s.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That it's like, it's hard to imagine entertainment in that decade if The Odd Couple had never existed. Goodbye Girl is still one of the greatest romantic comedies of all
Goodbye
time.
Goodbye Girl is fantastic.
And I learned this. I did not know this. It doesn't surprise me. They used to call Neil Simon as a script doctor on stuff on Broadway in the 1970s. And it, among the things that he worked on, A Chorus Line.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, oh my God. I'm so sorry, dead person. I can't think of your name right now. Oh, Carrie Fisher. It's just like Carrie Fisher. She was a writer.
Oh, she worked on everything.
She was a writer in her own right, but so many scripts, both scripts, both movies and theater, so many things she tossed her signature charm into and didn't even, she purposely did not ask for credit. She did not want to be credited, which I thought was so cool when I found that out about her. But it's just crazy that she, like, that there are people that do that. That's like we were talking about when I talked to Bronson Arroyo.
She's the best.
It's the love of it.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. All right, the good news is that we are almost done with the heat. It's
I hate when you start with the good news.
It is almost over. Tonight, we're not anywhere near done with it. It's still in the 80s right now. Lows only in the mid-70s tonight, pretty much wherever you are. Tomorrow, thunderstorms move in the afternoon to cool us off. Before that, we're going to see highs in the mid-80s, lows around 70 degrees tomorrow night. Once again, you know, humid day. Heat index is going to be up in the 90s, but then after that, on Friday, the temperature falls back into the low 70s.
Oh, sweet relief.
The low will be in the mid-60s on Friday night. Saturday, chance of some afternoon showers, high in the low 70s, lows in the mid-60s. Sunday, we get a little bit warmer, mostly cloudy skies, highs in the low 80s, lows in the mid-70s. And then Monday, Labor Day, partly cloudy, highs around 90, lows in the mid-70s, and the humidity is going to stay with us through all of that. But the really, really, really bad stuff is done. We're going to be pretty much settling into a pattern of mid-70s during the day, mid-60s at night, and humid pretty much through the end of next week. And then,
so maybe it's going to be miserable, and then like not super miserable, and then like pretty miserable.
It's going to be tolerable miserable, I think, is the way to describe it. And this weekend should actually feel pretty nice after the nonsense that we've been dealing with. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. When we come back, Louis C.K. is back on stage. Shay's not happy about it. Shay needs to get over herself. We'll talk about that.
I need to get over myself. I need to get over... we'll get to it.
This is not how we wrap it up and tighten up the show.
Hey, everybody. Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is my fantabulous co-host, Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to squeeze in a call with us, it's at 855-915-WMFO. And we are talking about that adorable sexual harasser, Louis C.K., and his triumphant, unapologetic return to comedy.
Is it sexual harassment if it's consensual?
When you are a brand new comedian and one of the most famous comedians in the country asks if it's okay if he, I don't even know if I can say this on the radio, whips it out. Can I say that?
May I pleasure myself in front of you, I believe was the question that he was asking.
No person in their right mind would say no, not because they want him to do it, but because they're terrified about what it will mean for their career.
All right, so power
if
imbalance.
They refuse.
Fair enough. We know people on the edges of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And the practical upshot of the story is Louis C.K. showed up at the Comedy Cellar over this past weekend and performed. Did a 15-minute set.
Yeah, he did a drop-in. Yeah.
I think on Saturday and Sunday. Am I more than once?
Yep.
Now, I don't know if we'd actually... I know, Shay, you and I have talked about this amongst ourselves.
Yes.
I don't know if we'd ever discussed this on the air because we know people who perform at the Comedy Cellar. And
wonderful people.
I had heard from several people that the Comedy Cellar, as soon as the story broke, was willing to give him the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically said, you know what? We love Louis. We know who Louis is. Louis is welcome to come in here and perform anytime he wants. So I don't know if we talked about it on the air, but I knew.
I believe we did, but briefly when all of this first broke.
I knew that the first time he got back up on stage was going to be at the Cellar.
Oh, obviously.
So when I saw it over, like, I was like, oh, Louis's back. And then, of course, Twitter gets involved.
Well, and again, lending itself to what I was saying before, in terms of, it's very similar to that, obviously, you won't say no to Louis C.K. if he asks if he can pleasure himself in front of you because he's Louis C.K. and you're a struggling comedian.
Right.
quite similarly. That's why, I mean, honestly, I love doing comedy. I love being on the radio. I love a lot of things about being in the entertainment industry. But the more that you dive into it, the more terrible things you discover about it. And the more things that kind of shatter the childhood illusion you had about it. But no, my point being that, of course, the Comedy Cellar welcomed him back. First of all, that was his home club before he was who he is now. He also was a huge draw there before he had 4 Emmy Awards sitting at his feet. He included them in the opening of his Emmy Award winning show. Both my siblings live in New York City. I went to college in New York City. Half of my friends live in New York City. They had no idea what the Comedy Cellar was until Louis C.K. included it in the opening of his award-winning television show.
Well, it's this little hole-in-the-wall bar that unless you are there specifically looking for it, you're never going to find it.
But that's the thing, is I, of course, knew what it was because I was a comedian.
Right. It is a cellar, by the way. It's a legit cellar.
You think Caroline's is going to have Louis C.K.? Do you think that what's the one with the break that's adorable on Broadway?
But here,
comic strip? Do you think they're going to have Louis C.K. again?
I think you're missing my point in this, which is it wasn't the ownership of the Comedy Cellar that was okay with having him in there. It was the performers. It was the people I know who are in there performing every weekend who are okay, who are by and large around your age, who were perfectly okay with having Louis C.K.
Are they men or women?
They're men, but they're not all straight.
Doesn't matter. That is the difference. That is, my friend Derek, my friend Derek Sheen, who is a fantastic national comic based out of Los Angeles and Seattle, he posted a whole long rant about all of this, against Louis C.K. And one of the things he said is, to the women who have had a comedian expose himself to her, like, my heart goes out to you. Like, and I commented on the feed, wait, there are female comics who have only had one male comedian expose himself to them? Lucky bitches. The difference. And honestly, it breaks my heart because I loved Louis C.K. I thought he was brilliant. I loved that he came from Boston. I loved that he was half Irish, half Mexican. I mean, how does that even happen? Like, I loved everything about him. I loved how honest he was about his family, about all these things. And it broke my heart when all of this happened. And then for him to, if he had come in to work, to perform at the Comedy Cellar and owned what happened, addressed it in any way. Like, I have obsessive compulsive disorder. I talk about it on stage all the time. I used to have a unibrow. I talk about it on stage all the time. I am really mean to a lot of people, and I talk about it on stage all the time. He made national news for exposing himself to coworkers. That's the biggest thing. Coworkers. It'd be one thing if it was a random comedy club waitress, and I'm not saying that's better, but I'm saying that it makes it a little bit more, okay, well, like, I've made out with the bartender at a comedy club before. It wasn't another comedian.
He did not even close to acknowledge.
He pretended it never happened.
I don't, well, that's...
He just tried to hop on stage and act normal.
That's a stretch.
It's not a stretch. It's true.
So let me give you some context on this. Richard Pryor's first setback after he set himself on fire was not about setting himself on fire. Okay? Richard Pryor went on to write one of his greatest, most memorable bits about setting himself on fire. But as
do women stay up at night thinking about Richard Pryor setting himself on fire? Do they cry themselves to sleep over it?
At the time, I imagine a few did, but I'm talking about process here. Okay, I'm not talking specifically about, you know, how anybody was harmed by him or whether anybody was harmed by him, because in my eyes, all right, I accept the power imbalance, okay? I accept that Louis C.K. making a request of you as a young comic is a different situation because he is powerful, okay? This was not new behavior for him, as anybody who knows his roots understands, all right?
Which, I mean, when this broke, all of us were like, oh, I thought it was a different female comedy duo.
Yeah. So this wasn't anything new for him. And I have said from the beginning, I do not put Louis C.K. in the same category as a Bill Cosby, who drugged women and took advantage of them, as a Harvey Weinstein, who basically a woman would walk into his hotel room and he'd just throw himself at her, okay? Louis C.K., and I want to be very, very clear about this. In his mind, believed that by asking for consent,
it was okay.
It was okay, and did not understand that his power imbalance with those women was a significant problem. I don't think he recognized that.
And
that's a dumb mistake.
And no, in that case, I do agree with you. It's just like when I first started doing comedy, there was a comic that I had a crush on.
Then I married Molly.
Shut up. He and I made out at a party, and then it got interrupted, and then we both were sleeping on the floor of said party. And he apparently was asleep, but I thought he was still kind of awake, and I just kissed him goodnight. That was it. The next day, I got 4 text messages being like, oh my God, did you make out rape Kyle? He's saying that you make out raped him.
Is that a thing?
I was like, I didn't know it was. But that's why, like, but it was a thing. I understand the notion of, like, I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. Now I feel dirty. Like, I felt like I was doing something normal. But the thing with the, it really broke my heart when all of this broke. But the thing that made me feel better was the sheer fact that, like you said, he asked for, I'm not saying it was okay, but he asked for permission. He asked if it was okay, which again, like I said, no up and coming comic is going to say no to anything Louis C.K. asks. If he asked me to hang halfway out the window of a 10-story building, I'd do it. Because he's Louis C.K.
I can argue that any
other comedian would do the same.
I think the question you have to ask, though, does he recognize that he has that power?
Of course.
Should
he
recognize that he has that power? I don't know.
There is a picture with 4 Emmys on the floor at his feet while he stares at his cell phone. He knows he has that power. But my point being that I could let all of that go. I could let all of that go if... Do you know the phrase, the elephant in the room?
Yeah.
It's one of the most important things in comedy.
It might be Louis C.K.'s penis in this story. I'm not 100% sure.
It might be one of the most important things to keep in the back of your brain in comedy. Whereas, like, say you go on stage and in the middle of your set, someone has a seizure. You have to talk about the seizure. That's not owning up to something. That's not... You have to address the thing that is on everyone's mind in that moment.
Okay.
Louis C.K., when he took the stage at the Comedy Cellar, knew no one had to say or do or look at him, do anything, look at him a weird way, anything. Louis C.K. got on that stage knowing exactly what every single member of the audience was thinking about. That was his opportunity to address it. And like I said, I agree with you in that he didn't think he was doing anything wrong. He asked for permission. It was just sheer naivety and him having what many, many male comics have, which is some kind of Pinocchio complex.
Here is where I'm going to disagree with you, and we're running tight on time on this, so we gotta move through it. Here's where I disagree with you. I agree with you that it has to be addressed.
Pinocchio? No, Peter Pan. Sorry. Peter Pan complex.
I agree with you that it has to be addressed. Sooner or later, he has to address what happened. However, an unannounced...
I hate when you say however.
An unannounced drop-in show that happened to get picked up by the New York Times. It's not like anybody... It's not like the Comedy Cellar was calling up the Times and being like, hey, Louis C.K.'s coming in tonight. Put it on the front page. They found out about it after the fact, and everybody blew up about this after the fact.
It's 2018. Every news media channel that exists knew 5 minutes later.
You are a stand-up comic. You know the process. You know that if you have not been on stage for a year, you have no business getting up on stage and doing new material. The way that you get yourself back is you get on stage and you do proven material and you find your way back around that. And then once you've got that rust shaken off, then you can start talking about the elephant in the room. The person having a seizure during a show is a different situation. That's unplanned. It's spontaneous. Yes, you have to react to it.
First of all, when I take time off of comedy, which I think my record of not being on stage at this point is like a month, maybe, when I was injured.
Yeah, you've never been away from it for a year. I have, and I know what it's like going back in there after that. And this wasn't voluntary on his part.
Not only do I do new material that I think of off the cuff to address the room, which helps get the rust off better than joke roboting your old jokes, I typically try to take the bullet just to throw myself into the fire. That's something I do. And I am not one of the most famous comedians in the entire world.
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
How does that... You don't know what that has to do with anything? Sheer fact that I'm a professional comedian. I get paid to do comedy. I screw up sometimes, but I screw up way less than a lot of open micers. I have a general sense of how you do this. I don't have a Comedy Central special. I have never been on one of the late night shows. Louis C.K. is one of the most famous comedians in the world.
We got to tie this up. I'm going to leave it at this. You have never been away from the stage for a year, have you?
Not the comedy stage, no.
Okay.
The difference being...
That's it.
That I'm not Louis C.K.
It doesn't matter. You don't know what it's like to get back on that stage after you haven't done it for a year.
But neither do you.
Yes, I do.
In terms of Derek Gary. That's my point. You do in terms of you. You don't in terms of Jerry Seinfeld has taken 6 months off. I'm pretty sure he hopped right back on that saddle.
You hop back on the saddle, but it's not as easy as you think it is. And if it's your first public...
I don't think it's easy. I'm just saying...
If it's your first public appearance after you haven't been on stage for a year...
You haven't been on stage for a year.
No.
Yes.
You do shows like...
It feels like you're hiding something if you don't.
Well, then you may as well accuse every Boston comic, Steve Sweeney, and who's running for governor? What's his face?
I'm not going to do that.
Jimmy Tingle and all those guys.
I'm not going to do that to Steve. His jokes are 30 years old. They're starting to get arthritis.
Accuse them of hiding. Accuse them of hiding when they get a big gig and they drop into an open mic to test new material because they don't want to put it in front of a paying audience the first time that they see them.
Again, we're not talking about Steve Sweeney. We are talking about Louis C.K.
It doesn't change when you get to Louis' level. The process and the risk and the show and the performance are all still exactly the same.
I respectfully disagree.
Well, that's because you have a slightly warped view of what's going on there. Anyway, 855-915-9636 is the phone number. It is the big picture.
Slightly warped.
Our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week when we come back here on WMFO Medford.
Okay, gang. So, chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But, just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So, who's gonna do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Blaine. With me, as always, is Derek Berry. We're wrapping things up here. We're going to be here with you for about 10 more minutes. But we're going to finish things off with two of our favorite segments. First of all, What's Hot, which is our favorite thing from the last or coming week. For me, I'm going to shamelessly plug myself, which I'm very excited to be back at Nick's Comedy Stop this weekend. I'm hosting for Ray Harrington, who is one of the funniest comedians I know. Show's at Saturday at 8 p.m. If you want to get tickets beforehand, it's www.nickscomedystop.com.
Today's an important day in history, Chase Blaine.
Is it?
A very important day in history. Today is the day that the LEGO Group has chosen to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the LEGO minifigure. It was actually, the first patent was submitted on this date in 1977, but the first minifigures came out in 1978. So LEGO is combining those two dates and has made today the 40th birthday of the LEGO minifigure. And if you are of a certain age, you remember seeing these for the first time and how your entire world changed. How the way that you viewed LEGO changed, because now there were these amazing little action figures that went along with everything. I am going to tell you to go check out a website called thebrickfan.com, www.thebrickfan.com. This is one of the top LEGO news sites for the United States. And what they've got, LEGO has been releasing all sorts of promotional materials to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the minifigure. They've made videos about how they're made. They've released designer sketches, all kinds of information about it. You will find it all on that one website, organized and easy for you to consume at your leisure. That is thebrickfan.com, thebrickfan.com. Everything you need to know about the 40th anniversary of the LEGO minifigure.
I won't lie, I love when people pronounce that leisure instead of leisure.
Leisure?
Your leisure.
That's a, that's
your leisure.
That's a
UK
thing.
It sounds like
thing.
Something, it's, I wouldn't say, it sounds like something either a British person or, oh my God, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name right now. He just died. Or Hugh Hefner would say.
Yeah, that's absolutely a British way.
Leisure.
Yes, they refer to the leisure industry over there.
Leisure.
Make the most of your leisure time. Yeah, that's doing that sooner than it should.
Where's your head at?
Someday the buttons will work. Someday everything will queue up the way
fingers
it should,
crossed.
And we'll have a good show. Until then.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We are wrapping things up here at The Big Picture. I am, of course, Chase Blaine. Across from me is Derek Gary. And we're going to wrap things up with That's a Thing That Happened, which is the craziest news story we were able to find from last week. For me, residents of an Idaho neighborhood woke up Friday morning to a sight that really got their goat. Oh, how cute. An invading herd of more than 100 goats rampaged through the neighborhood of West Boise, devouring flower beds, grass, and leaves as they move from yard to yard on Friday morning. Representatives of the company that owns the animals, which is literally named We Rent Goats, arrived at the scene and managed to herd the goats onto a truck around 9 a.m., less than 2 hours after the initial calls were fielded by animal control from the 10,000 block of West Summerwind Drive. No goats or humans were injured, but the yards paid the price.
We rent goats. What do you suppose they do there?
I mean, What? I just keep wondering, like, what would one rent a goat for?
Like,
if you can't afford a lawnmower, that's the only thing I can think of. Like that. And that's still kind of a stretch.
People like goats.
I mean, goats are funny.
Yep. People like goats. Points unknown.
Points unknown.
Points unknown. The origin of this will remain a mystery, though it has been verified as being true. A bride canceled her wedding and left a lengthy post on Facebook explaining why, which I am going to share with you now. We don't usually do straight up reads, but this one I may skip over a few bits. But
if he's doing it, you know it's worth it,
folks. I'm telling you, it's worth every second. This is from Susan. That's all we know is that this was written by a Susan. Dear friends, it comes with great sadness that I am announcing the cancellation of the wedding. I apologize for canceling only 4 days beforehand. Unfortunately, blank, and I have broken up due to some recent and irreparable problems. We have decided to end our relationship and not go forth with any future proceedings. However, we are remaining civil and are still a team for our son. After hours of tears, mental exhaustion, and even disassociation, I have come to this decision. In 1 hour after posting the status, I'm going to delete my Facebook. Social media has caused me only paranoia and toxicity. I will be spending these next 2 months backpacking in South America, I'm guessing without her son, exploring my soul and ridding myself of toxic energy brought on by my friends and family, the ones who I thought could trust the most. Hence, I will be out of the country for all of October and November. Please don't contact me. When I'm ready, I may have a new Facebook and add friends, family that haven't effing stabbed me in the back. Effing is spelled out. How did this all come crashing down? Well, I invite you all on Facebook, players,
oh, it's not over.
Bystanders, and side characters of the people in my life to take a seat and listen. You're all involved somehow. Somehow everyone is wrapped into this mess. Even if you weren't invited to my wedding, I don't care. You might hear of the drama, and I'd rather you hear it from me. I'm just asking for sympathy. I just want to tell my story. Before I begin this mini novel, I invite all of you, including the C-words who have ruined my marriage and life, to put yourselves in my shoes. For once, let me take the stage and let me voice the most painful few months of my life.
Jesus Christ.
First, things were a fairy tale. I met the love of my life at 14. We were both young, but somehow we just knew we were meant to be. We worked on my family's farm together, and with each warm summer spent in the fields, our love grew deeper and deeper. Fast forward to high school. We went strong all 4 years. He put a ring on my finger when I was 18, worth nearly $5,000. We had put everything on the line for each other. Everything. We both chose to attend the same community college and work full-time in order to build our dream. We spent most of our days by each other's sides. I will always be thankful for that. Fast forward a few years, I was 20. I realized I was pregnant with my first. We were elated, tearful, and thankful to God for this gift. After giving birth to Declan, D-E-C-L-Y-N, I knew the next step would be to focus on my career and become financially stable. My ex did the same. We saved and saved. I was in love. I was happy, and I was looking forward to life. We continued working and even got our degree. It was hard, yes, but so blissfully worth it. We managed to save up nearly $15,000 for a wedding. Since our love was like a fairy tale, we wanted an extravagant blowout wedding, one where our son could be included. We started touring venues and were torn between two. A local psychic told us to go with the more expensive option, and we thought, why the hell not? We just needed a little push. Our dream wedding amounted to $60,000, all included with flights to Aruba.
If she ever has trouble sleeping, she should have someone read this to her.
All we asked for was a little help from our friends and family to make it happen. I specifically, all caps, I mean specifically, again all caps, asked for cash gifts. How could we have our, all caps, wedding that we, all caps, dreamed of without proper funding? We had sacrificed so much and only asked each guest for around $1,500. We talked to a few people who even promised us more to make our dream come true. My maid of honor, who shall not be named, pledged $5,000 along with her planning services. We tearfully thanked and accepted.
Where do you get those friends?
My ex's family offered to contribute $3,000, so our request
they pay for the wine
for $1,500 for all other guests was not effing out of the ordinary. Like, we made it clear. If you couldn't contribute, you weren't invited to our exclusive wedding. It's a once and a lifetime party. So we sent out RSVPs, and only 8 people replied and sent us the check. We were effing livid. How is this supposed to happen without a little help from our friends? To make matters worse, my ex's family took back their offer. Suddenly, more people backed out. The following 10 words are in all caps, including the C-word maid of honor, my best friend since childhood.